And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With it till 3 on this Monday as we break down everything from over the weekend. Coming up, the World Series heads back to Houston. Are Braves fans starting to get a little worried? Excited? How you feeling as we head into November and Game 6 of the World Series? Plus, as always, our winners and losers from college football. Dabo called Saturday a top 5 victory in his time coaching college football. Plus, all of my takeaways from week 8 of the NFL season. Tomorrow is the trade deadline in the NFL. What needs to happen in the next 24 hours? And we'll continue to keep our eyes on Deshaun Watson, just in case. Plus, the Panthers snap their losing streak, but is Matt Rhule ready to bail? And a whole lot more over the next few hours. Plenty of reactions from Halloween as well yesterday. And a whole lot more between now and 3 o'clock. Breaking down the sports weekend throughout the afternoon. And you can always join the conversation as well. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show. 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. On Facebook at ESPN Charleston. Via email, studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Monday, Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, what's going on? It was a pretty good Halloween weekend, although I know Saturday was pretty horrifying for you guys.
Yeah.
But other than that, good weekend. How about you?
Yeah, I'll be honest. Yesterday's probably the worst Halloween I've ever had, and it had nothing to do with Halloween itself. But since Halloween fell on an NFL Sunday, Halloween took the carnage from my Sunday yesterday. It was brutal. And we'll get into the World Series. We'll get to our winners and losers coming up in a moment. I have always said, as we now enter November, which is hard to believe, right, that November 1st is the worst day of the year, one of the worst days, because it's the day after a holiday. And I know today is technically, All Saints Day. I don't know how many people do celebrate that nowadays. Some do. But that's All Saints Day also is not like a festive day per se. So November 1st, the day after a holiday, is always a tough day. That's why after Thanksgiving, we had to come up with Black Friday. After Christmas, you still have New Year's Eve coming up to look forward to in a week, and you don't work a whole lot between then. Halloween, you have all month to get ready for it. The scary movies are on. The weather starts to turn. You put up the decorations. You're buying candy. You go out, kids trick-or-treat. You hand out the candy. You wake up November 1st. It's like it never happened. Movies are gone. People take the decorations down. Sure, candy's like half price. That's nice. But now you feel guilty when you eat candy instead of, it's Halloween season. And now it's not. Now we get ready for Thanksgiving. The turkey decorations are already out. It's sad, November 1st. But yesterday was especially brutal for me in particular. Let me make this about myself for just a moment. Hopefully you had a great Halloween. I don't have kids. I'm too old to trick-or-treat, of course. So I had nothing to do with Halloween itself, and I just watched football all day. And what a brutal day it was, because my Minnesota Vikings lost to Cooper Rush. And I come in today, and the first thing I see here in the studio waiting for me on my chair is a picture of Cooper Rush, and it says that Monday morning feeling when your team gets beat by a guy who went to Central Michigan. Bobby has bragging rights with the Cowboys beating the Vikings for the second straight year and doing it with a backup. And we'll get into all of my Week 8 takeaways from the NFL coming up. I will say, however, number one, Cooper Rush was the better quarterback last night, so that's pathetic for Kirk Cousins. Number two, what do I always say? Some of the best quarterbacks do come from smaller schools. So I shouldn't feel so bad that a guy from Central Michigan beat the Vikings. But that was an embarrassing loss for the Vikings last night. We'll get into it later on. Not only that, I took the Cincinnati Bengals in my survivor pool. So now I'm out of my survivor pool. I got chopped in my other guillotine league yesterday. I suffered my first loss in one of my other fantasy leagues. I went 1-3 in fantasy football yesterday. My team lost. I got chopped from the guillotine league. I have Derrick Henry on all my teams. He gets injured. All around, it was just a brutal day yesterday. I couldn't get a victory anywhere. Had no candy. Too old to go trick-or-treating. Brutal. What an awful Sunday. But we're here today to break it all down and feel better. The Braves lost, right? I'm not even a Braves fan, but I was hoping the Astros wouldn't win the World Series. Now we got to sweat it out heading to Houston. Brutal Sunday. Hope you had a better Halloween than I did, and it had nothing to do with Halloween. It could have been any other day of the year. And I sat there in misery yesterday on one of my favorite days of the year, Halloween, because of everything going so poorly. By the way, when your team loses as well, when it's Sunday night football, it's even worse. Like when it happens on a 1 o'clock window, okay, by the time I go to bed that night, right, I'm still upset, but not so much. It's been 12 hours later or 8 hours later. But when it happens, when it's a Sunday night game, you're waiting around all day. It builds the anticipation for that game. You're expecting a good performance. They go out, they lay an egg, and now, right, you got to try to go to bed. You wake up the next morning, you're still upset. Ruins your whole week. Come in, got to see this photo of Cooper Rush on my desk. What a terrible Halloween it was after I was hyping it up all month. Loved this day, and it really let me down. Let me start with this. There are certain things you do that you don't feel the effects until later on. For some reason, you could stay up all night, you get very little sleep, you'll be fine the next day. Usually it affects you 2 days later. I'm not sure why that is. But if you stay up all night, you get very little sleep, right? The next day, you're good, you have energy, you can get into work and operate, but then you crash either that night or you wake up the next day, and even though you're just coming off a good night's sleep, and you still feel tired because it's catching up to you. I say all the time on the show, certain things we do that you don't see the consequences until potentially years, decades later. You could be a smoker early on in your life and then develop cancer decades later, right? You could have a poor diet, not take care of yourself early on. You deal with the health consequences maybe decades later, years later. And for the Atlanta Braves in this World Series, I feel like it was something similar. They pull Ian Anderson from the game Friday night working on a no-hitter through 5 innings, and it worked out. They won the game. They came back. They won again. But I think they felt the effects a little bit last night, 2 days later. Right, a little bit further down the road. It finally caught up to you, like most things in life. Right, you can get away with something for a while. Eventually, it's going to catch up to you. You can run some sort of Ponzi scheme for a while, get rich off of it for a few years. Eventually, it's probably going to catch up to you. For the Atlanta Braves, their scheme, I think, caught up to them by last night. The bullpen pitched 22 straight innings in a World Series for the Braves over the weekend. And it started off working out really well. They allowed just 2 runs in the first 14 of those 22 innings. Bullpen was really good. That's why they were able to shut the door and still win on Friday, tossing a 2-hitter. They then came back and pitched really well on Saturday, won again to take a commanding 3-1 lead. And then you rely on the bullpen last night. You jump out to an early lead, and the relievers couldn't get the job done yesterday. They allowed 9 runs in the last 8 innings of that 22-inning stretch, including at least 1 run in 5 of those 8 particular innings. It worked Saturday. You could even say it worked Friday, pulling Ian Anderson that early. It did not work last night. And it's kind of like when you go to the casino. I don't know what your favorite game may be. I love playing roulette, but I don't play the numbers because the odds are ridiculous. You have, what, 1 in 37 chance? It's not worth it. Yeah, sure, if you hit a number, you get the big payout. But I have bad enough luck, as evident by yesterday, that more often than not, I'm not going to hit those numbers. So I play the rows, the columns, the colors. I do all that sort of stuff. When I have a 33% chance or I have a 50% chance. I mean, you factor in the zero, the double zero. It's not quite 33 or 50%, but you get the idea. But if you go to the casino and you sit down at the roulette table and you play the numbers and you hit the number, you put your little chips down on 7, it hits, you get a 37-1 payout, you're feeling good, and you try to double down. And you go right back to number 7, thinking that it'll come up twice in a row on that roulette reel. Chances of that happening are incredibly slim. Just like for the Braves, it worked out Saturday night going all bullpen game. The chances of it working out again the next night, or even for the second and a half night, if you want to include Friday, getting 4 fantastic innings from your bullpen, the chance that you could string together 22 consecutive excellent innings from your bullpen, very unlikely. And Saturday night, you get 1 out from Dylan Lee, and you still win the game. And then you really press your luck the next night because no team prior to the Braves, had won a World Series game getting fewer than 2 outs from their starting pitcher in 40 years. You had to go back to the Dodgers 40 years ago. It's happened only 3 times ever in World Series history. 117 World Series, I think we've had. Only 3 times has a team ever won a game in a World Series when their starting pitcher didn't even get 2 outs. The Braves did it the other night. Then you come back last night, Tucker Davidson got more than 1 out. He pitched 2 innings, but still, right, you continue to press your luck. You needed 9 full innings Saturday. You need essentially 9 more innings. Tucker Davidson, include him as a reliever, you know, because you knew you were only getting 2 innings out of him. You needed 9 more innings from your bullpen last night. Didn't pan out, which is why the Charlie Morton injury was huge, because he would have been on the mound last night. This series could be over right now. We could be celebrating a Braves victory right now. You would have called out sick from work. Maybe you were in, well, you know, maybe you were in Atlanta. You flipped a car. Who knows what things would have been like around there? You have your own celebration at home. Could be a lot different today if Charlie Morton was healthy. It's why when that injury occurred to start the series, we came in here the next day and talked about how big of a deal it was. Now, in the end, the Braves can still win this World Series. It'll be just fine. You just extend it a little bit. But if Morton was healthy, he's on the mound last night. He's one of the better postseason pitchers of the last 5 years. You could count on him at home. I don't know if he would allow, in total, you know, 9 runs to the Astros last night. Could be a different game. And instead, you have to turn to Tucker Davidson, who gives you 2 innings in what was his first appearance in the big leagues since June 15th. Ian Anderson was dealing on Friday. You pull him after 5 innings. Now, I know, look, he only had pretty much as many strikes as balls. He was wildly effective. But he had a no-hitter through 5 innings. And he was due up to bat in the bottom of the 6th. You could have let him go at least 1 more inning. Maybe push your luck. See that he gets a 1-2-3-6? Yeah, maybe you send him back out in the 7th. Who knows? The analytical approach, and Snitker said after the game he was just trusting his gut. I think he was trusting the numbers in the sense that there is such a fear nowadays of allowing a pitcher to face a lineup for the 3rd time. And we see it all the time in the playoffs. Starting pitchers rarely get to face that lineup for a 3rd time, because the idea is the batter will figure you out by that 3rd time. Or you're a little more tired, you're not as sharp by the time you get to that 3rd trip through the lineup. You fool them the first 2 times, you can't fool them a 3rd time. But for Ian Anderson, his numbers are very similar the 3rd trip through the lineup as the 1st trip. He actually isn't one of those guys that really falls off when he faces hitters a 3rd time. He could have stayed out there for the 6th inning with his no-hitter the way he's pitched against 3rd trip through lineups. And again, it worked out on Friday. So it's hard to sit here and second-guess the decision-making. But where it didn't work out was over the course of the weekend. With that said, you still take a 3-2 series lead at this point. You'd sign up for that heading back to Houston any day of the week. But I miss, and I've talked about this for 2 weeks, and it makes me sound like an old man yelling at the clouds. I get that. I miss the days of trusting that starting pitcher. Go back to 1995, the last time the Braves won a World Series. They were in a similar spot with Tom Glavine. Game 6 against the Indians. He had a no-hitter going. They kept putting him out there. He ended up going 8 innings. Did surrender a hit. Lost the no-hitter. But he went 8 innings, threw 110 pitches that night. They won the game, therefore winning the World Series that very night. Series on the line. A little bit different than Friday. Although, the winner of Game 3 in a series that's tied 1-1 goes on to win the World Series 2/3 of the time. So that was a big swing game. And you go back 25 years ago, it just shows the difference in baseball. Last time the Braves won a World Series, they rode Tom Glavine to that championship. They said, yeah, you take us there. This time, Ian Anderson gives you 5 no-hit innings, and they say, thank you, your work is done. We'll go to the bullpen. Right, with the series on the line, you ride your stars, Tom Glavine. In this case, Ian Anderson, who's been so good in the playoffs in his career. But nowadays, you don't want that pitcher facing the lineup for the 3rd time. You'd rather rely on your bullpen, hoping that their arms are strong that night, however many you may need out of the bullpen. It worked out for the Braves on Friday, but I think it caught up to them by the end of the weekend. And now for the Astros, they head home, still with a chance. And the Astros are the first team in playoff history to come back from a series in 3 straight years. They've already come back from a series this postseason. It was the ALCS. Down 2-1 on the road, came back and won. They're the first team in playoff history to do it 3 straight years. In 2019, they erased a deficit in a series, came back to win 2020. Now this year, 2021, and they're trying to do it for the 2nd time this postseason by winning the next 2 at home. And as Dusty Baker said after the game, the hardest thing is winning the 1st one. Once you win that 1st one, right, you have to show yourself you can do it. And we could say this really about everything in life. You always struggle to do something for the 1st time. Then once you do it, you realize, like, oh, that's not so bad. Or you ever have to face your fears before? And you don't want to do something, just say flying. I've been talking to some buddies lately who I didn't realize had a fear of flying. So that's why that's let's go with that. Right, you know somebody, or maybe you yourself were scared of flying. Then you get on the plane, and it's fine. Everything works out, and there's no turbulence or anything, and it was actually somewhat of an enjoyable experience. And you're like, oh, that wasn't so bad. I could do that again. The hardest thing is to do something for the first time. But then once you do it and you realize, like, oh, that's not so bad, it's easier to continue to do said thing. The Astros won last night. The hardest thing is to get that first win. Now they're heading home. They won last night. They realized, oh, you know what? We could actually pull this off. And if you're a Braves fan, if you're an Atlanta sports fan, do you start to have that concern creep back in? Like we were talking about in the NLCS, where we were talking about the Braves having to kill this narrative to the point where it became meta. The Braves were talking about it as well. Their own players were talking about it. Right, we have to kill this narrative. Well, the narrative still exists right now as well until you actually win the World Series. Right, you think of the Atlanta Falcons and the way that they blew that that Super Bowl. And for the Braves, up 3-1 at home, you hit the grand slam, you have the early lead, you cough up that game. Now you have to go back to Houston leading 3-2. If you're a Braves fan, a Georgia sports fan, are you confident? Are you feeling good? Are you excited? Or even if it's just in the very back of your mind, do you start to have that concern or doubt creep in about what lies ahead in Houston? Because the Braves yesterday were the third team to hit a grand slam and lose a World Series game in the history of the World Series. The first since 1988 to hit a grand slam in a World Series game and not win that game. Only the second time in a playoff game ever that a team hit a grand slam in the first inning and didn't win. By the way, both times have happened this year. That had never happened prior to this year in playoff history, where a team hit a grand slam in the first inning and didn't win the game. It's now happened twice this playoff. The Tampa Bay Rays and now the Atlanta Braves. Teams previously were 45-3 when leading by 4 runs or more in a clinching game in the playoffs. They're now 45-4 after yesterday. And the last number I'll give you about how rare of a comeback, I guess, that was for the Astros yesterday. How rare that was that a team would actually end up losing that game like Atlanta did yesterday was that this postseason, teams are now 23-2 when hitting more homers than their opponent. That was just the second loss yesterday. But if you're the Atlanta Braves, you can keep perspective that you still have a 3-2 lead. Yes, you're going on the road, but now you have Fried and Anderson, Max Fried, Ian Anderson, in the final 2 games. No more bullpen games. You got through the bullpen stuff, and you got out of there with a lead. And you haven't lost back-to-back games in 6 weeks, and you just need to win 1 out of 2 with your 2 starting pitchers on the mound. So in the end, even if things didn't work out yesterday, you want to be greedy and say, oh, we should have won all 3 at home. We could have clinched the series yesterday. In the end, you still have a 3-2 lead, which was probably, right, going back home, you probably thought, let's just take 2 out of 3. Sure, it'd be great to win in Atlanta, but being realistic, let's take 2 out of 3 and take a 3-2 lead back to Houston. That'd put us in a good spot. I think you would sign up for that, especially knowing you have Max Fried and Ian Anderson in the next 2 games. The Braves are still very much in a good spot. And the other last number I'll give you is that teams that lead a series 3-1 are 40-6, finishing out those series. Only 6 times have we seen a team erase a 3-1 deficit. The last time it has happened in 12 opportunities was 2016, yes, also in a World Series with the Cubs and the Indians. So it wasn't that long ago, but it doesn't happen all that often that a team blows a 3-1 series lead. Will the Braves be the next team on that list? I mean, it'd be so Georgia sports for it to happen. But the way the Braves have been playing yesterday, you know, notwithstanding, and with the starting pitching lined up, you still feel good about the Braves, even if they have to head to Houston to try to get it done. Somebody called into the show on Friday and asked, you know, who do you think is the most important player in this series for the Braves? And initially I said Max Fried. And then as I was answering the question, I realized, no, it's probably Ian Anderson. Ian Anderson was the youngest player on either one of these rosters, 23 years old. He was starting Game 3 the other night. As I've already mentioned again this afternoon, the winner of Game 3 in a tied series goes on to win said series 2/3 of the time. So that was a huge game Friday night. You have your youngest pitcher on the mound in his first World Series game. I thought, you know what, Ian Anderson is actually the most important pitcher, or most important player in general. And he went out there and pitched well enough, a no-hitter, allowing the Braves to win and take the series lead. I originally thought Fried. I then swapped to Anderson. But now, as we end this series, who is it going to come down to? Those two. Max Fried tomorrow, and potentially, if it goes to a 7th game, you have Anderson back on the mound Wednesday night. 23-year-old potentially would be pitching in Game 7, the biggest game of his career with the season and the championship on the line. And for Max Fried tomorrow, he has not pitched well of late. He was the ace the second half of the season. You need to be able to count on your big guns in the big spots. And yet Max Fried has an ERA of over 7 in his last 3 playoff starts. But you can wipe that all out with a good outing tomorrow in Houston. Who are the most important players in this series? You knew when the series started. In fact, you knew once Charlie Morton got injured. Who would play the biggest roles? Max Fried and Ian Anderson. That's who you need to fall back on and rely on now without Morton. And here we are, heading to Game 6, 3-2 lead. You need a good start from Fried tomorrow night to wrap this thing up. And if not, it falls on the shoulders of 23-year-old Ian Anderson, who would be pitching in a Game 7 of the World Series. Now, the Braves, as mentioned, they do head to Houston, 3-2 series lead. It could be a lot worse. You could be down 3-2, having to win both in Houston. They're still in a good spot. They have their starting pitchers set up here now with Fried and Anderson. Let's hear from Brian Snicker, manager of the Braves, after yesterday's game. As the Braves lost that one last night, series heads back to Houston. Here's what the Braves manager, a couple of his thoughts following the game last night.
When we won yesterday, it made it easier, I guess, coming into this one, but we knew it was going to be tough. You know, it's just that's just a lot of innings to cover against a club like this that swings a bat so well. So, yeah, I mean, just the good news is we'll take a day off and be, you know, be in good shape.
Hey, Brian, I just wonder if you could address the emotions of, you know, having the chance to close it out tonight. Obviously, it's disappointing, especially when you get the 4-0 lead in the first inning.
Yeah, no, I just. I'd much rather score that big run like in the seventh inning. We don't have so much time to cover. It was good. I mean, that was exciting right there. But we knew it was still had a long, long way to go in that game, and anything could happen. So, you know, it just it'd been great if we could have kind of kept adding on a little bit. Just hard to do that.
Hey, Brian, a World Series is a World Series win no matter where, but how much, I guess, in particular, did you want to win that at home? It's been a while since, you know, a team has won.
No, it'd been great. I think you'd always love to do it here. I'll take it anywhere. I mean, I don't care where we're at. I mean, if we can win a World Series, it doesn't matter to me where it is. I mean, I'd love to have done it in front of our fans. Hopefully we can, you know, do it in the next couple of days.
Snit, with Max Fried going in Game 6, I mean, how much are you looking forward to not having to piece it together and have a guy like him?
No, it's good. I mean, you know, with him going on, he's ready to go. I mean, we had him in reserve. If something happened today and we got locked up in extra innings or whatever, we were going to, you know, run him down there and possibly use him today also. But, you know, I always feel good when Max pitches. I mean, it's he always gives you a chance to win. And our bullpen's in good shape. Max has got full rest and we should be good to go.
Snicker after the loss last night for the Braves. They're up 3-2. Yes, have to head back to Houston, but you have the lead with your two arms on the mound the next 2 days, and you need a good start out of Max Fried tomorrow night. He has struggled his last 3 outings in the postseason. Needs to come through tomorrow for the Braves so they can now finally celebrate their first World Series in a long time. Coming up, we usually start every Monday with winners and losers from the college football weekend, but we have a World Series going on. So when we come back, we'll get to my winners and losers from Saturday in college football. Plenty of each, and we'll do it next. It's the Morrow Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Winners and losers from the college football weekend here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Open the show talking about the World Series, which will continue tomorrow in Houston. Braves still lead 3-2, trying to shut it down. And if you ever miss anything from the show, such as my breakdown of the games over the weekend from the World Series, you can always find that on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcasts. We usually open the show every Monday with winners and losers from the college football weekend, but when you got a World Series going on, we had to start with that. That's why this time of year, of course, is the best because there's so much going on. as was the case once again Saturday in the college football world. So I got my winners and losers, seven of each. We come in, we do it every Monday, looking just beyond the box score, the biggest winners and losers from the football weekend moving forward. Plenty of both. Let's get to the winners and losers from the college football weekend.
Here's what I want you to look at. There are winners. There are losers.
Well, I guess I'm a loser. A loser.
And there are people who have not discovered how to win.
You bet I'll watch your step.
The biggest winner of the weekend is Auburn. They're number one for beating Ole Miss, doing so by double digits, beating a ranked team. And now Auburn, they control their own destiny. Now, it may be unlikely, but they have a shot to go all the way to the SEC championship, therefore giving themselves a chance to go all the way to the playoff in year one of Brian Harsin. Yesterday, or I should say Saturday now, was the first step. They beat number 17 Arkansas. They had a bye. They follow it up by beating number 10 Ole Miss Saturday. And now they get Texas A&M this week, big spot, two top 13 teams, and you get Alabama at the end of the year. If Auburn runs the table, they win the West Division, head to the SEC Championship, and if you can beat Georgia as well, you'd have an SEC champion Auburn team making the case for the playoff. Now, they do have two losses, but both are against top 10 teams, and if they do run the table the rest of the way, that would include five wins against top 20 teams, plus SEC champion, finishing the season on what would be a seven-game winning streak. In the process, they could become the first two-loss team to make it to the college football playoff for winning the SEC and going on this run to end the year. But at minimum, you'd be in the SEC championship year one of Brian Harsin if you run the table the rest of the way. It's a tall task. On the road at Texas A&M Saturday, Alabama at the end of the year, at least you get them at home, but they did just beat Arkansas on the road, followed it up with a win against Ole Miss, two top 17 teams. This team's playing well. They can run the football. Bo Nix has been better since his benching. Auburn got a big win on Saturday against Ole Miss. If Ole Miss won that game, they would stay alive in the West. Now, with Auburn's win, they control their own destiny in the West. It's not Alabama. It's Auburn. It'll come down to that Iron Bowl at the end of the year. I mean, therefore, Alabama does control their own destiny as well, win out the rest of the way. But you get the idea. Comes down to the Iron Bowl. There's a path for Auburn to the SEC title game as well. The second biggest winner, Michigan State. Beating Michigan, doing so in come-from-behind fashion, outscoring Michigan 23-3 in the final 19 minutes. That game kicked off. Michigan got a couple of turnovers early on, built an early lead, and I thought, oh, yeah, you know, here we go. Michigan is the better team. And then second half came around, and Michigan faded, disappeared. They turned the football over. Michigan State came back. Huge win for Michigan State. Obviously, not only for the rivalry, but now Mel Tucker 2-0 against Michigan since taking that job. That's big time. Also big time for him if he's looking to get another job this offseason. And then when it comes to the Big Ten itself, Michigan State, much like Auburn, winning on Saturday to continue the opportunity to control their own destiny. The Big Ten becomes a round robin here the rest of the season. Michigan against Michigan State, Ohio State against Penn State, Michigan State against Penn State, Michigan State against Ohio State. They're all playing each other here the final month of the season. And if you just keep winning, you'll be winning all the way to the Big Ten championship. That's the case for Michigan State. Michigan, their season is not over in the sense of trying to win the Big Ten, but they're just going to need some help now along the way, and you never want to rely on others, especially when you have the opportunity to do the job yourself, and they couldn't get that job done on Saturday, coughing up that game and losing to Michigan State. As a favorite, no less, on the road. Big-time win for Michigan State. The third biggest winner from Saturday, Will Shipley, freshman running back for Clemson, comes back from his injury. 128 rushing yards, two touchdowns on Saturday, gets the game-winning score against Florida State. Dabo afterwards, we'll hear from him coming up, but he called it a top-five win in his coaching career, potentially. He said it may be a top-five victory. I don't know if that's the case, but it was because of Will Shipley's 21-yard touchdown run that gave them the lead for good. And if you're a gambler and you gambled against Clemson like I did, what a bad beat that was with the scoop and score, however it's classified there on that final play for Clemson to cover the number. Made it not look quite as close in the final score or the box score as that game truly was, and it was Will Shipley delivering the big touchdown. DJ, with a couple of more bad plays, costly turnovers, gets stripped. Florida State scores the touchdown. They take the lead, and you think, oh, my goodness, we're going to lose to Florida State at home because of that play? And Shipley, what do your best players do? They put the team on their back. They pick up their teammates. After you make a costly mistake, they'll come back and make a big play, and he's doing it as a freshman. Quarterback let you down again. Okay, here's the freshman running back. Hand me the football. I'm carrying us to a victory. Shipley was a big winner on Saturday. Gives you something to be excited about moving forward with him being just a freshman. And he became just the second Clemson freshman running back with already three multiple touchdown games in a season since 2000. And in the process, Clemson also scored their most points against an FBS team all year, which was nice to see for them. Shipley, the third winner of Saturday. Number four in the biggest winners from Saturday is Dave Clawson. For a number of different reasons, head coach of Wake Forest. For number one, they're still undefeated. They won again on Saturday. They're undefeated. And if they continue to run the table, go undefeated, win the ACC, you got to put Wake Forest in the playoff. But more so than that, Wake Forest is the smallest school in the conference. They had 80% of their students at the game on Saturday. Right, they're undergrad. They got like 5,000 undergrads. But what a boost he will have in recruiting because of all this. Not only their own success, but the fact that their quarterback, who I know has ties to the area, their quarterback is maybe a Heisman candidate. And then also, Michigan State's running back, who played so well on Saturday, Kenneth Walker, with his 5 touchdowns, transferred from Wake Forest. So even though he's not with the program, he originally went there. Dave Clawson recruited him. He went to Michigan State. I think you could take a little credit for that. You have one of the better, you have one of the Heisman candidates on your program. You have another Heisman candidate who left your program, which, yeah, may not seem good. Oh, he transferred out. That doesn't look good. But it shows you recruited him, you brought him in, you helped develop him. He went somewhere else and is playing even better at a bigger program. I think that still reflects well on Dave Clawson to bring that guy in there and to springboard him to a bigger program with a better career. Dave Clawson and Wake Forest will reap the benefits from this great season. Number five of the biggest winners, Manny Diaz. There were reports that if Miami lost last week, that could be it for Manny. And now he follows that up with back-to-back wins against ranked teams. First time Miami has done that in 5 seasons. They got a win against Pittsburgh on Saturday, upsetting Pittsburgh in a close game. And since De'Aaron King's injury, it seems like Miami actually found the better quarterback, his replacement. And to finish out this season for Miami, they have Georgia Tech, Florida State, Virginia Tech, Duke, 4 teams that have worse records than them. I don't think Miami will win all 4 games. It's hard to trust them, but they could. And you finish the game on a winning streak, finish the season, I should say, on a winning streak. You finish with a much better record, and Diaz goes from potentially losing his job to maybe you're feeling optimistic heading into the offseason. Manny Diaz, the 5th biggest winner from Saturday. Number 6 is Minnesota. Now, they lost to Ohio State week 1, hung in there, but lost to Ohio State week 1. A couple weeks later, they lose to Bowling Green. That was a bad loss. And oftentimes, you get one loss like that, you know, we forget about you. Because especially in college football, it could be one bad loss that changes, that it ends your whole season. You lose in September, that could be the end of your season. So we kind of put you out of our mind and forget about you. Oh, no. They lost to Bowling Green. What are you talking about, Minnesota? Right, kind of like Ohio State. They lost to Oregon. Right? What are you talking about, Ohio State? They already lost their one game. And you focus on Michigan State, who's undefeated, Michigan, who was undefeated, Iowa, who was undefeated. And then teams will get better while you're not paying attention to them. That's the case with Minnesota. They're now in first place in their division. If the season ended today, Minnesota would be in the Big Ten championship game. And they've won 4 straight games. Their last 2 conference wins were by 18 points, 27 points. Look out for Minnesota. Iowa is cratering. Minnesota's getting better. And Minnesota, they control their own destiny. If they went out the rest of the way, they're in the Big Ten title game. And that could be intriguing, going up against either Michigan State or Ohio State. Playing better football now, hung in there with Ohio State early in the season. Keep an eye out on Minnesota. We focus on all these other undefeated teams or, you know, top 15, top 10 teams in the Big Ten. Here comes Minnesota playing better football and giving themselves potentially a chance to compete in the Big Ten championship. And the last winner, number 7 from Saturday, is the aforementioned Bowling Green. They get their first conference win in 13 conference games. But more than that, they were a 14-point underdog. They end up winning by 12 on the road. A 26-point swing based off of the line. And even more than that, their coach got ejected. So while Bowling Green State is the winner, their coach is probably the loser. First coach in college football to get kicked out of a game in 6 seasons. And how about this? Bowling Green scored more points in the 18 minutes after their head coach got kicked out than any other game, full game, in the last 2 years with their head coach. That doesn't look good. Because he's the offensive coach as well. That doesn't look good. They kick out the head coach, and the offense plays better than it has in 3 years. And you think, like, oh, maybe we don't need this guy. And they get their first conference win in over 2 years without their head coach. So Bowling Green's the big winner. getting a rare win in the conference, doing it on the road as a big underdog, but in the process, their coach kind of the loser. Like, wait a minute, we did this without you. We finally won while you were in the locker room. We finally scored a bunch of points while you had nothing to do with the game. That doesn't look so good on the coach. Which takes me to the seven losers from Saturday. Those are the seven winners, the seven losers. Number one, it is Harbaugh. And I've defended Harbaugh, and I think he has done better than people give him credit for at Michigan, but he hasn't done well enough in the biggest games, and I can't defend him there. All sorts of numbers to throw at you for Harbaugh. He's 54-10 against teams that are not ranked in the top 10. Really good record, 54-10. Problem is, against top 10 teams, he's only 2-13. Additionally, in the Big Ten, he's 35-7 against teams not named Michigan State or Ohio State in the Big Ten. 35-7. Right, he wins 80% of his conference games. That's really good. Problem is, he's only 3-10 against his rivals, Michigan State and Ohio State, and those are the most important games every year. And he's 0-2 against Mel Tucker now, who just came in first, you know, just took over the job, the new guy at what you would call your, you know, little brother, and he's 2-0 against you. That's a bad look for Harbaugh. Right? You struggle against D'Antoni's been there for a while. Okay. They bring in a new guy and he beats you back-to-back years to begin. Not good. Michigan State looks to be already further along than Michigan, and he's been on the job for 2 years. You've been there for seven. And Michigan was favored in both of those losses. All four of their losses the last 2 years, Michigan were favored in. So all four losses the last 2 years were against teams that they were expected to beat. That's not good either. They coughed up a lead in the second half. They lose to Michigan State, the biggest game of their season to this point. And if you can't beat Michigan State, stop worrying about trying to beat Ohio State. How about you beat Michigan State first? Harbaugh is under 500 against Michigan State in his 7 years there. No wonder he can't beat Ohio State. So another big loss for Harbaugh on Saturday. Michigan is so good under him, right? We don't give him enough credit in one sense, but then in another sense, I guess he doesn't deserve the credit because he can't beat these two rivals. When Michigan does not play Ohio State or Michigan State, they're really good. They win about 80% of their games. But when they play those two teams, they cannot win the big games. Number two on the list of losers, Kentucky. They laid an egg coming off a bye against Mississippi State. This was one of those games I did not include it in my picks on Friday because I figured Vegas knew something. Kentucky was an underdog to Mississippi State, and I thought, what is going on here? I know they're on the road, but Mississippi State's a 500 team. Kentucky's the number 12 team in the country. And if you just watch them, I've been more impressed by Kentucky this year. I thought, how are they an underdog to Mississippi State? It seemed fishy, so I left it out of my picks. It seemed too good to be true. And sure enough, it was. Coming off a bye week, 2 weeks to prepare, they let an egg. They played terrible. Mississippi State was the better team for the entire 60 minutes. Will Levis threw three interceptions for Kentucky. Mississippi State's quarterback had three incompletions. He went 36 for 39. Brutal. And I will give some credit to Mike Leach and Mississippi State because this was their third win against a ranked team this season. But for Kentucky, this is one of those games that if you want to show you belong, you got to win a game like this. You can't botch. I wouldn't call it a layup. It is a road game in the SEC, but this is a game that you should win. Top 12 team against the 500 Mississippi State team. If you want to be taken seriously, if you want to take your program to the next level, if you want to go to a big-time bowl game, you got to beat Mississippi State when you have 2 weeks to prepare. They played terrible. Kentucky, the second biggest loser of Saturday. Number three on the list, Cincinnati. Because even though they won, again, they kind of lost. Last Saturday, it was a seven-point win, only a seven-point win against one-win Navy. This past Saturday, they were up only two with 18 minutes to go in the game against a one-win Tulane team. Not good. These are the teams that you're supposed to put style points on the board. You're supposed to beat them by 30, so we look at you as an AAC team and say, yeah, but they're so much better than their conference. Instead, now we come away saying they struggle with one-win Navy, one-win Tulane. You think they could compete with Georgia and Alabama and even Oklahoma and these other teams? I will say Oklahoma also struggled with Tulane earlier this year, and they're, you know, considered very much a playoff team in the top five. So same idea for them as is Cincinnati. We'll make that argument against Cincinnati, but I don't think many people will against Oklahoma. And then on top of it for Cincinnati, SMU also lost. The one team left on your schedule that was going to be a top 25 team that would help you improve your strength of schedule, SMU lost. They probably, I haven't even looked. I don't think they're ranked anymore. That doesn't help Cincinnati either. And Ohio State, similar, in the same boat. Ohio State hadn't been tested. One game against a top 50 defense all year. One game against a team that received a vote in the top 25 outside of their loss to Oregon. And they go up against Penn State, favored by 20. That game was a little too close for comfort in the second half. Sean Clifford looked way too good against Ohio State for you to come out of there feeling really good about Ohio State. They had been dominant, but against a bunch of bad teams. Against Penn State was a big-time test, and their defense still looked a little vulnerable, where you watch that game and think, man, if Sean Clifford's doing this, what's going to happen to this defense if they go up against a big-time team in the playoff? You come away from that Ohio State game, I don't think feeling as good as you hoped going in. Number four on the list of losers, Iowa, sticking in the Big Ten. They lost again. Second straight loss. They managed only 156 yards on offense. We will compare this season to 2007, which was also a very chaotic year. And in 2007, there were a bunch of teams that got to the number two ranking in the country and then faded. Boston College was the number two team in the country. Then they lost back-to-back games to unranked teams, similar to Iowa. Iowa could be the Boston College of this season, the 2007 Boston College. You also had, on a smaller level, South Florida in 2007. They were the number two team in the country. Then they lost three straight games to unranked teams. You also had Cal was the number two team in the country and then lost three straight games in 2007. Actually ended up finishing that season with six losses. Maybe Iowa really free falls. Or you could even point to South Carolina in 2007, who reached as high as number six in the country and then lost their final five games of that season to finish 500. Point being, that's kind of going to be Iowa this year, one of those teams from 2007. They were the number two team in the country. They've lost back-to-back games. I wouldn't be surprised if they just fall apart here the rest of the way. Number five on the list of losers from Saturday is Texas. It's their first three-game losing streak since Charlie Strong. It actually cost Charlie Strong his job. He got fired after losing three straight games. But in the process, they have blown a double-digit lead in the second half of all three losses. They have led in the fourth quarter in all three losses. That is bad. Now, it's Steve Sarkisian's first year on the job. Maybe he's still trying to find a way to win with these guys. They're still trying to win. But what a frustrating season for Texas. All of their losses have been blown leads in the second half. Just think back to that Oklahoma game. That's brutal. And if it wasn't the first year of Steve Sarkisian, those are the losses that cost you your job when you cough up game after game after game. We will excuse it for Sark because it is his first year. But if this was a coach in his fifth year and his team was already kind of 500, you get fired for that. You lose three straight games or you're leading in the fourth quarter, that's an indictment on the coaching staff. Sark off to a slow start at Texas. Number six on the list of losers, along the same lines, Dan Mullen against Georgia. Now, Georgia has the number one defense, the number one team in the country, so sure, cut Dan some slack. And I'm as big of a Dan Mullen fan as anybody. But coming off a bye week, 2 weeks to prepare, you manage only 7 points. That offense, that was a pathetic outing. Florida was almost shut out for the first time by Georgia since 1988. Managed just 7 points there late in that one. And now Florida 2-8 in their last 10 against the Power 5. And in all four losses this year, they have more yards than their opponent in all four losses. So they're putting up yards. They're just not taking care of the football. They're not finishing in the red zone. It's the little things that typically reflect on the coaching. All four losses, they have outgained their opponent, which in some ways tells you they kind of played better than their opponent and still didn't win. And how about the decision to have Anthony Richardson make his first ever start against the most dominant defense we've seen in a long time and the number one team in the country? And Florida hung in there until the wheels came off late in the second quarter. Problem was, they couldn't do anything offensively. Their defense kept them in that game until Georgia ran off 21 quick points and put it away for the half because their offense was turning it over and giving Georgia points. They hung in there because of their defense, not because of their offense. Their offense was dreadful. And a good defense, or at least a good defensive coach, beat a good offensive coach on Saturday in that one. And lastly, the last of the losers on the list from Saturday is TCU. They were picked as a dark horse in the Big 12. And yet this year, they've been a big disappointment, leading to Gary Patterson's dismissal this weekend after 21 years on the job. Patterson had been under 500 the last 4 years as head coach of TCU, and the biggest indictment is that he was a defensive coach, and yet TCU has surrendered over 29 points in every game this year. Their defense has been really bad. Gary Patterson out after 21 years at TCU. They've had a disappointing season. They're last on the list of losers from the weekend. And there you go. Winners and losers from the college football weekend. We've packed a lot in already to the first hour here this afternoon. We'll wrap up hour one when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wrapping up hour one here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Coming up, my takeaways and thoughts and breakdowns from week 8 in the NFL season, which finishes up tonight with the Chiefs and Giants. Plus, the NFL trade deadline is coming up tomorrow, and we actually got breaking news on a trade that just happened, according to Adam Schefter. Von Miller is being traded to the Rams, and this is Schefter's. You always have to double-check this time of year, but this is his legitimate Twitter account. So Von Miller going from the Broncos to the Rams, as if the Rams needed any more talent on that roster. And let's see, it's for 2 second-day draft picks in 2022. So not a first-round pick. That would be, what, second or third round. Two of them in 2022 for the Rams. So now you add him to Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey, a lot of big names on that defense for the Rams, as if they needed more assistance. That's why after Thursday's game, I said, you know, I'm watching the Packers, watching the Cardinals. I think there's a gap between them and the Buccaneers, even though the Buccaneers lost yesterday, and the Rams. And now this only helps, of course, the Rams as well. You add Von Miller to that defense as well. We'll see what other teams do in the next 24 hours. The Packers could probably use another playmaker. The Cowboys could use a little help on that defense, especially stopping the run. We focus so much on the turnovers forced by the Cowboys defense. But when you remove the turnovers, even after the performance they had last night, it's still just been an average defense, especially against the run. You got the Titans now certainly need a running back after Derrick Henry's injury. They're working out Adrian Peterson today. Maybe they pull off a trade. What terrible timing if you're the Titans to have Derrick Henry go down, because the trade deadline's coming up tomorrow. So at least it's not a week from now when you can't make a trade. But it's like, all right, Derrick Henry may be out for the season. We don't know for sure yet, but that's the idea. And that offense runs through Derrick Henry. In fact, nobody has a higher percentage of their team's yards than Derrick Henry does. It literally is the most important team to any offense in the league. I mean, quarterbacks are the most important, but you get the idea. That offense runs through Derrick Henry more than any other skilled player for their team in the league. So outside of quarterbacks, Derrick Henry would be the biggest loss for an offense. Titans lose him. At least they do have some time to work with, but you got about 36 hours to try to go find a replacement if you want to get one, a replacement in the trade market. Otherwise, go sign an Adrian Peterson or whoever else is free out there and available. Did you see this game in high school football the other night? Not in these parts, but I saw a quarterback, a UCLA commitment, Justin Martin, set the record for throwing the most touchdown passes in a high school football game. He had 13 touchdown passes, and his team, he plays for Inglewood, they beat Morningside 106-0. 13 touchdown passes. At what point do you kind of take it easy? All right, call off the dogs. Put in the backup. Hand off the football. They won 106-0. He had 13 touchdown passes. Crazy. Now, Joe, you were just telling me during the break that we've had some impressive high school football teams here in our own area.
That's right. Seven teams in area won region championships this year. Goose Creek won Region 7 5A, but they finished 6-3 overall. Oceanside Collegiate, actually friend of the show, Rich Altman, that's why he hasn't been doing the Southern sports scene lately. He's coaching linebackers for Oceanside.
Nice.
They finished 6-3 and won Region 8 3A. Philip Simmons, first ever championship in football. They opened a few years ago, finished 8-1 and went undefeated in Region 6 2A. And in fact, they had to win a battle of the undefeateds with Perennial Power Timberland to win that one. Okay, and then Baptist Hill is undefeated. They swept Region 7-1A. They're undefeated overall as well. And Williamsburg Academy, right there in King, just up the road in King Street, finished the regular season undefeated. Won Skeezus Region 8-2-2A. And, of course, Holly Hill Academy, still undefeated in eight-man play.
That's right.
Yeah, in fact, won a battle of the undefeateds on Friday to decide the eight-man Region 2 championship. So and the playoffs start Friday.
So Holly Hill Academy, they haven't lost a game since their coach came on the show, right?
Even before then.
Well,
it's been almost 2 years.
Yeah, but we're trying to steal the credit here. So,
okay, yeah.
Since he came on the show, they're undefeated.
They're still undefeated.
Yeah, so welcome. That's what we do around here. Not bad. Get to all my thoughts on the week 8 of the NFL slate when we come back, plus the trade deadline. Hour 2 next.